Tonight I'm going to talk about peace, primarily inner peace. I feel like we live in a world where we really need peace, and we really need to be thinking about peace. And I think that the best way to bring external peace is to come from a place of internal peace. I think the way I'd say it is that the most powerful message that we share with the world is our energetic signature, what kind of emotional energy we have in our core being. And, we're such verbal creatures. We think that, I can talk my way into, well, I'm this kind of person, really, I'm this kind of person, but so much of what we share is just comes from the energetic impact of our core being. And so to be in a place of tremendous peace is an extraordinary contribution to peace in the world. So I'll say that, of course, I've been meditating for a while, as many other people here have, and I've gone on meditation retreats many times. I'm sure others have. And one thing that always amuses me, that people who are not very familiar with meditation, they may say, they may find out I have a meditation practice, or they may, they say, what are you doing this weekend? Oh, I'm going to a meditation retreat. And their response is, oh, that sounds very peaceful. And what amuses me about that is, of course, the actual practice of meditation could be anything but peaceful. The practice of meditation, we see ourselves. You sit with yourself. You see all your failings. You see your weaknesses. You wrestle with all kinds of difficult emotions. Your demons come up. It's very real. And there are times that it can be harrowing to see these sides of yourself that you've never seen before. The first time you see your demons, it might be the most terrifying thing imaginable. But then you see them over and over again, and by the 473rd time that you see them, it's like, well, okay, there you are again. In other words, you get sick of yourself at a certain point. And if anything, the peace from meditation comes with the fact that I just get so used to facing all this stuff in myself that nothing in the external world phases me that much, Another way to say it is that when we're meditating, we're learning to sit with discomfort. We're learning to grow our emotional container, grow the container of what kind of experience we can hold. And the larger a container we have, the more we can just hold from a place of equanimity. And so I'd say there are lots of paradoxes on the road toward inner peace. I think the way I would say it is that the good news is that the deep ground of our being is inner peace. Abiding inner peace is something we all have within us. We all deserve. It is our birthright. No one can take it away from us, And at the same time, how do we get there? Well, how we get there is not always peaceful. How we get there is often asking the difficult questions, sitting with the things that we didn't want to sit with, leaning into the discomfort is how we get to inner peace. I'm going to read this short passage from Rumi that I really love. All disquiet springs from the search for quiet. Look for disquiet, and you will come suddenly on a field of quiet. All illness springs from scavenging for delicacies. Renounce delicacies, and poison itself will seem delicious to you. All disappointments spring from your hunting for satisfaction. If you only could stop, all imaginable joys would be rolled like pearls to your feet. Be passionate for the friend's tyranny, not his tenderness, so the arrogant beauty in you can become a lover that weeps. And just this idea that, the very search for peace sometimes is the thing that's getting in the way of me arriving at peace, There's all kinds of paradoxes like that. One way to say it is, I think I would contrast deep, abiding inner peace with what I might call a very shallow peace. You know, and I use the metaphor of a walled city, you know, this little city of this is what I'm comfortable with, and this is where I'm going to have peace, you know, and everything out here, everything out there is are the dragons and the meanies and the bad guys. But in this walled city, I have peace. One way to say it is, I think one of the crucial questions in life is, are we willing to face the things in us that are difficult to face? Are we willing to look at our shadow? Are we willing to look at our failings? Are we ready to sit with our discomfort? Are we ready to face our fears? You know? And it's the nature of that, you know, even something like, am I willing to face my deepest fear? That's not a one-time event, as I've talked about before, because the thing that is my deepest fear now, I face it, I acclimate to it, and then in a way that prepares me to face then the next thing that comes up, you know, and then the next thing, and then the next thing, you know. And so it's this process of opening deeper and deeper, expanding vulnerability deeper and deeper. Now, the person who refuses to face their deepest fear, it's not just one thing they're refusing, they're actually refusing this whole concatenation of things behind that. And the nature of the psyche is that it has this profound ineluctable tendency toward wholeness. And you might even say that the world itself has this profound this tendency toward wholeness. So anything that I'm that my ego is refusing, I'm not going to deal with that. Almost inevitably, the world finds a way to shove that in my face somehow. And that's what's always very fragile about a very shallow piece. What I'm calling the world, the walled city, that shallow piece. The person who refuses to face a lot of difficult things, and I'm just going to be comfortable in this little realm, then the world forces those things on that person, you know? And sometimes we hear people in this narrative of, you know, this incredible blame narrative, you know, I could have great peace of mind if I just didn't have to deal with this person and that issue and that sort of thing, you know? And it's funny to some extent, you know, that's all of us are a little bit that way. You know, there's no matter how open we are to life, there are some ways that we're not open. You know, we're not Buddhas, you know. And so, you know, we're odd amalgams of being open and heroic in some ways. And then in that very like, you know, I just want my little comfort zone in other ways. Yeah, and so it's funny because we have that deep intuition, we have this deep, well, how to say it? Because that deep inner peace is part of our nature, it can be easy to confuse more shallow forms of peace for that deep peace. Like the mind very has a tendency to want to think, I'm done, I've gotten there, you know? And so if we get to any level of peace, we want to think, all right, I've made it, you know. But then that might still be a very shallow place compared to deep peace. And so it's one thing I've been thinking about a lot in this time. Certainly the news that we're getting right now is not peaceful, you know. And how can I say? I think from a very shallow perspective, someone might say, well, can't these protesters, can't they just be quiet and go home, you know, and then we'd have peace, you know? And I'm reminded of that profound quote of Dr. King, peace is not the absence of tensions, but the presence of justice. You know, which I think is a profound statement of the contrast of sort of a neurotic safe peace versus a more inclusive peace. I think I would say that one example of a kind of that kind of walled city of very shallow peace is white privilege. You know, that I can be in my whiteness and not face anything else, and pretend that I have security, and I can even think, well, you know, my life is pretty peaceful. And then things like this come along, and then again, I might be in a blame narrative. Well, why can't they stop that so I can go back to enjoying my peace? You know, this sort of thing. And it's, I'm really quite a fan of, there's a scholar by the name of Ibram Kendi, and I'm really a fan of his idea that in this day and age, there's no such thing as being not racist, you know, especially for a white person. There's no such thing as not racist, you know. Either I can be actively doing the work of anti-racism, asking the hard questions, engaging with that work, or if I'm not doing that work, if I'm just sitting on my duff, then de facto, I'm enjoying a system that perpetuates racism. And engaging in that work is all about asking the hard questions. It's all about sitting with the discomfort. And so I see it very much, you know, this what I would call the path toward inner peace. I see the work of anti-racism as very much in line with the steps one has to take to get to inner peace. In fact, I would even say that in America in 2020, anti-racist work is part of the Dharma. It is part and parcel of the Dharma, you know. If I'm going to love all sentient beings, you know, the Mahayana ideal, compassion to all sentient beings, part of loving all sentient beings is accepting them as they are, you know, being willing to hear their voice. You know, the paradox of someone who's in a place of white privilege, but professing Buddhist compassion or professing, you know, Christian agape, Christian love from that place, you know, it's essentially as if they're saying to people of color, I really love you, but I don't want to hear about your experience and I don't want to take responsibility for my impact on you, you know? And think of that in interpersonal terms. Like if you had a friend or a lover who said to you, I really love you, but I don't really want to hear what you have to say, and I don't want to take responsibility for my impact on you. Like who would sign up for that, you know? And yet, this is exactly, you know, the kind of statement that's being made if you're professing these high ideals of love from a place of privilege. So what really fascinates me about the historical moment we're living in is the way that the political is intersecting the spiritual. You know, as I've just said, I think, for example, for a white person doing the work of anti-racism, it's not just important political work, it's important spiritual work. I cannot be the person that I need to be spiritually, a person of tremendous compassion, if I'm not doing that work. And I would say these questions that I've been talking about in this Dharma talk, the questions that lead toward inner peace, you know, am I willing to sit with my discomfort? Am I willing to face my fears? Am I willing to ask the hard questions? These are spiritual questions. They're very intimate questions of personal growth work. But in this day and age, there are also political questions. They're very much political questions. Because really the kind of nation we're going to have depends very much on whether the majority of white people are going to be able to ask those questions of themselves. I'll also presence that really the piece that Buddhism talks about is a piece that involves a profound acceptance to all beings as they are. You know, and so to look out across our current political landscape, you know, a profound acceptance for the people who are protesting, even the people who are rioting. You know, maybe I wouldn't choose those actions, but I certainly have sympathy for what they might be feeling. But another group that needs our compassion and our understanding are the police. You know, I think we live in a time when it's very easy for liberals to demonize the police. And it's tricky, you know, because highly sensitive peaceniks like myself don't go into that line of work, you know? They have a very hard job, a very unenviable job. They deal with all the stuff in society that no one else wants to deal with, you know? That's sort of the nature of their job. Which does not excuse any of the, you know, any of the abuses that they might have committed, but it's, I don't think we're going to come to an answer as a society without involving all parties, and that means involving the police, and the only way we're going to involve the police is if they're invited to the table with respect for who they are and what they offer, you know? Yeah, the Buddhist ideal of universal compassion, it's very tricky when it gets down to the details, you know? It really means everybody. So I want to say a little about a synonym for peace, serenity. And I want to talk for a moment about the serenity prayer. Serenity prayer is a prayer that was created by a Christian theologian, Reinhold Niebuhr. And when he wrote this prayer, he was just writing sort of a general prayer for everybody. Soon after he created the prayer, the founders of AA discovered the prayer, and they said, wow, this is just what our members need to hear. They started using it in AA, and because that was a very successful program, a lot of the other 12-step programs that imitated AA also started using the Serenity Prayer. And so it has that association, but really it was created just as a general prayer. And as you may know, the very traditional form of the Serenity Prayer is, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot accept, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And so years ago, I've been reflecting on the Serenity Prayer and really thinking about the, you know, the tremendous role of responsibility and how that might be reflected. And so years ago, I created what I called my own version of the Serenity Prayer. It's kind of inspired by the Serenity Prayer. This is the version that I say every day. May I accept deep responsibility for all the consequences of my actions, both intentional and unintentional. May I take deep responsibility for my emotional states. May I take deep responsibility for everything I control and everything over which I have some kind of influence. May I accept complete surrender toward all those aspects of life over which I have absolutely no control and no influence. May I cultivate tremendous trust and acceptance where my control and influence end. May I relax into the deep vulnerability of human life. And between what I control and what I do not, what I influence and what I do not, may I have the wisdom, the courage, and the insight to know the difference. So at this point, I'm going to share the quote sheet. I'll put this in the... The quote sheet has the long Rumi quote that I quoted earlier. It has my version of the Serenity Prayer. It has this famous quote from the Gospel of John. Peace I live with you, my peace I give to you. Not as the world gives, do I give to you. Let not your hearts be troubled, neither let them be afraid. And this whole idea that this transcendent peace, it's very different from what the world considers peace. St. Francis of Assisi says, while you are proclaiming peace with your lips, be careful to have it even more fully in your heart. And again, that whole idea that the energetic signature is really the thing that we most communicate in the world. And then a lesser known saint, St. Francis de Sales, says, never be in a hurry. Do everything quietly and in a calm spirit. Do not lose your inner peace for anything whatsoever, even if your whole world seems upset. St. Francis de Sales was a fascinating character. He lived during the Counter-Reformation, and he would go into these Protestant areas, these Calvinist areas, and try and convert them, you know? And of course, people would just shut their doors. So he would write these pamphlets and he slipped them under the door. And, you know, people would shut their doors, but the kids would be playing outside. And so he would just sit down and he would start talking about Christianity with the kids and how it's important to play nice and be fair and forgive and that sort of thing. And he just had this wonderful way of being with the kids. And eventually he, you know, the parents would came out and they were charmed by this guy who just had this sort of magical quality with the kids, you know. And so not that many of them converted, but St. Francis de Sales was known as the gentleman saint because even his enemies acknowledged what a wonderful person he was. From the great Lakota prophet Black Elk, I have his Lakota name there. Peace comes within the soul of men when they realize their relationship, their oneness with the universe and all its powers, and when they realize that the center of the universe dwells the Great Spirit, and that this center is really everywhere. It is within each of us. Sri Nisargadatta, who's an extraordinary guru, says, that which changed remains. The great peace, the deep silence, the inner beauty of reality remain. While it cannot be conveyed through words, it is waiting for you to experience for yourself. Thomas Merton says, may we all grow in grace and peace and not neglect the silence that is printed in the center of our being. It will not fail us. St. Oscar Romero said, peace is not the product of terror or fear. Peace is not the silence of cemeteries. Peace is not the silent result of violent oppression. Peace is the general tranquil contribution of all to the good of all. Peace is dynamism. Peace is generosity. It is right and it is duty. Oscar Romero was a remarkable person, a bishop in Central America, a passionate advocate for the poor. He was assassinated while he was saying mass because he had been criticizing the way that the government had been mistreating the poor. Carl Jung said, we must be able to let things happen in the psyche. For us, this is actually an art of which very few people know anything. Consciousness is forever interfering, helping, correcting, negating, and never leaving the simple growth of psychic processes in peace. It would be simple enough if only simplicity were not the most difficult of all things. And so the fascinating perspective on inner peace, just letting ourselves be in many ways. Albert Einstein says very simply, peace cannot be kept by force. It is only achieved by understanding. That amazing woman, Eleanor Roosevelt, said, it isn't enough to talk about peace. One must believe in it. And it isn't enough to believe in it. One must work at it. Kriyananda says, you will find peace not by trying to escape your problems, but by confronting them courageously. You will find peace not in denial, but in victory. Thich Nhat Hanh says, peace is all around us, in the world and in nature, and within us, in our bodies and in our spirits. Once we learn to touch this peace, we will be healed and transformed. It is not a matter of faith, it is a matter of practice. Again, the great quote from Dr. King, which is so important in this time, I'll say it again. True peace is not the absence of tension, it is the presence of justice. From the Dalai Lama, I believe all suffering is caused by ignorance. People inflict pain on others in the selfish pursuit of their happiness or satisfaction, yet true happiness comes from a sense of inner peace and contentment, which must in turn be achieved through the cultivation of altruism, of love, and compassion, and elimination of ignorance, selfishness, and greed. Wayne Dyer says quite simply, you have everything you need for complete peace and total happiness right now. Eckhart Tolle says, surrender to the grief, despair, fear, loneliness, or whatever form the suffering takes. Witness it without labeling it mentally. Embrace it. Then see how the miracle surrender transmutes deep suffering into deep peace. And Diane Ackerman said, I swear I will not dishonor my soul with hatred, but offer myself humbly as a guardian of nature, a healer of misery, a messenger of wonder, and as an architect of peace.